Gamma sales figures suggest we haven't yet found the bottom. A pilots union recommends its members opt out of body scans. And cargo pilots want thorough screenings for their planes, too. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, November 11th, 2010. New third quarter figures from the General Aviation Manufacturers Association suggest we still may be waiting for the economy to bottom out. In the first 9 months of 2010, total GA airplane shipments fell 14.5%, from 1,588 units in 2009 to 1,357 this year. Billings for general aviation airplanes totaled $13.47 billion in the first 9 months. That was down 2.5%. Gamma President Pete Bunce recalls sales announced at NBAA last month and remains upbeat. Quote, "I'm especially encouraged by the resources general aviation manufacturers are expending on the research and development of new products. Recovery indicators continue to fluctuate, but one positive indicator, the investment in new airplanes and technology, is solid. GA manufacturers are clearly looking toward the future and will be poised for a strong return when the economy fully recovers." Unquote. The Allied Pilots Association has taken a stand against invasive full-body scanners known as Advanced Imaging Technology, or AIT, saying that putting uniformed pilots through the process in view of passengers is demeaning and adds additional radiation exposure. APA President Captain David Bates says in a letter to the media that while airline pilots are certainly highly motivated partners in aviation security, he feels that the level of screening for pilots has spun out of control and does not significantly improve security. Bates adds there is an occupational health issue. Quote, "A typical Atlantic crossing during a solar flare can expose a pilot to radiation equivalent to 100 chest x-rays per hour. Requiring pilots to go through the AIT means additional radiation exposure. I share our pilots' concerns about this additional radiation exposure and plan to recommend that our pilots refrain from going through the AIT, unquote, and insist on a pat-down search out of view of the traveling public. This has interesting implications for TSA's checkpoint workload and could slow screening lines at times as well. Bates concludes that should the additional screening make a pilot late to his airplane, he should not, quote, cut corners that jeopardize the safety of the flight, unquote. The idea that a pilot who's about to be handed control of the airliner needs to sneak a weapon on board has always kind of amused me in a dark sort of way. CAPA, the Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations, is calling for improved screening of cargo carried aboard all cargo commercial flights for the second time in 3 years. CAPA was influential in passing the cargo screening bill of 2007, but all cargo carriers were not included in that bill. CAPA wants one level of security for all commercial flights and is concerned that all cargo aircraft could be targeted for terrorist attacks in the same manner as passenger aircraft. CAPA points to explosives found recently aboard UPS aircraft as proof its concerns are justified. Captain Paul Honorato, president of CAPA, says of the cargo screening bill, quote, "Unfortunately, the Cargo Airline Association managed to get a carve-out for all cargo operators, and those operations were not included. There must be one level of security for all commercial flights," unquote. CAPA is calling for immediate random physical inspection, bomb-sniffing dogs, or technology that can detect explosive material to be used on even all cargo commercial flights, just as it is for passenger flights. CAPA is a trade association which claims to represent more than 28,000 professional pilots. Up next on ANN, Rolls-Royce gets a new order during a tough week. The Dreamliner could face more delays after a fire. And live humans are now jumping from the A400M. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 11th. I'm Paul Platt. Before we go any further, today is Veterans Day in the U.S. Take a moment today to remember some who gave all. Rolls-Royce shareholders, who took another 3% hit yesterday as the Trent 900's uncontained failure story plays out, may be cheered a bit by this news. China Eastern Airlines has placed an order worth $1.2 billion at list prices for Rolls-Royce Trent 700 engines to power 16 Airbus A330s. The order includes a Total Care long-term service agreement. The two companies have also formed a carbon partnership, which aims to reduce CO2 emissions by 190,000 tons in its first year. Rolls-Royce will provide a fuel management service for the airline's fleet of more than 300 aircraft. It will also supply enhanced performance kits to upgrade the Trent 700 engines on China Eastern Airlines' 20 existing A330s. Rolls-Royce says the Trent 700 is the only engine specifically designed for the Airbus A330, and that over 1,000 are now in service or on firm order. The industry is waiting to see if the latest problem with the 787 costs Boeing any more program delays. The test fleet was grounded Tuesday after an electrical fire aboard Dreamliner ZA-002 forced a landing at Laredo, Texas, and the evacuation of 30 or more technicians using the slides once it got on the ground. The Seattle Times reports the fire affected the cockpit controls, and the jet lost its primary flight displays and its auto throttle. The pilot reportedly lost some use of the flight and engine controls, and the ram air turbine had to be deployed to generate backup power. It's not clear yet whether the problem was in actual aircraft systems or in test equipment which would not have been installed on a production plane. Adding insult to injury, ZA-002 is painted in the logo of All Nippon Airways, which will receive the first delivered Dreamliner almost 3 years late. That first delivery is scheduled for mid-February if there are no further delays. Eads and Airbus say six free-fall paratroopers made jumps from the test A400M aircraft Grizzly 3 in separate passes from 6,000 feet near Toulouse on November 4th. The paratroopers, who are from the UK and France, which just happened to be nations involved in both the buying and the building of the A400M, reported that the aircraft was easier to jump from than other transports. Four of them jumped from the left-hand side door and two from the ramp. In an earlier flight, water-filled balloons were first dropped from the aircraft, and following the paratroopers, specially instrumented mannequins were dropped using static lines. Further trials are planned for next year. Still ahead, a rare warbird is back from the bottom of Lake Michigan. The Smithsonian's clothing exhibit is no fashion show. And the U.S. Army spends $30 million studying FARDs. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, November 11th. I'm Paul Platt. A rare F4U-1 birdcage Corsair was raised from the bottom of Lake Michigan Monday. It'll eventually be displayed at the National Museum of Naval Aviation in Pensacola, Florida. WKRG-TV reports the plane's been at the bottom of the lake since it went down on a training mission July 28, 1943. Video from the station shows the aircraft largely intact as it's brought to the surface, but obviously in need of attention after nearly 70 years in the water. The aircraft was called Birdcage because of the framing around the canopy. The Naval Aviation Museum Foundation is supporting the restoration. SITES, the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service, is going on the road for 5 years to show the public the history of spacesuits. DuPont is a sponsor of the exhibition, which opens at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago in March. It tells the story of innovations, technical achievements, and challenges in the development of protective garments that have allowed astronauts to live and work in space. If the seasonal turn has you dressing in layers, consider this. ambient temperatures on the surface of the moon during the Apollo missions ranged from 253 degrees Fahrenheit in the daytime to minus 387 at night. 20 of the 21 layers of the Apollo moon suits either contained or were made entirely of science-based innovations developed by DuPont. Now, go ahead, complain about winter in Chicago. Finally today, the U.S. Army Aviation Applied Technology Directorate has signed a $30 million technology investment agreement with Bell Helicopter to develop state-of-the-art drive system technology under an initiative called Future Advanced Rotorcraft Drive System. The program is targeting a 55% improvement in drive system power-to-weight ratio, a 35% reduction in costs of production, operation, and support, 90% automatic detection of critical failures, and an 18 dB reduction in noise generated by the drive system. Bell calls it a great opportunity. Quote, "Drive systems are a core technology at Bell Helicopter, and we are proud to focus on enhanced capabilities for those whose livelihoods depend on our products," unquote. The plan is for 5 years, and proving once again that all the good acronyms are gone, the Future Advanced Rotorcraft Drive System program will be known as FARDS. Now, if the program needs to be extended, will the early phase be called Old FARDS? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell talks with Stearman enthusiast Steve McDonald about what's involved in owning, flying, maintaining, and insuring a Stearman. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.